case 20 of the Book of Equanimity, the Shoyoroku. Ditsang's intimacy. Ditsang asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "Around on pilgrimage." Ditsang said, "What's the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Ditsang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." There's a verse for this case. "Now, having studied to the full, it's like before. Having shed entirely the finest thread, he reaches not knowing. Let it be short, let it be long. Stop cutting and patching. Going along with the high, along with the low, it levels itself. The abundance or scarcity of the house is used according to the occasion. Roaming serenely in the land, he goes where his feet take him. The purpose of 10 years' pilgrimage. Clearly, he turned his back on one pair of eyebrows." So that's the case in this, which is really a wonderful case, and I will talk about it and aspects of it in a way. It's so clear, and it's so clear despite the fact that this is from more than 1100 years ago in a different culture, but it's talking about exactly our own life, and that's the point of these cases, and that's the point of me talking about it. Otherwise, there's no reason to talk about these old stories of people in China, but in a way to talk about this for us, I need to unpack some of it. Not for the sake of scholarship or any kind of knowledge or any such things, but to unpack it is to make clear how this is exactly our life. Now, I have already simplified, because the case in this collection has an introduction, but I didn't want to add too much to our examination of it. So we'll start. This starts Ditsang's. Some people translate the second word as nearness, which shows something that's very useful, that this is about what's near, which another word for what's intimate or what's most intimate, if we use that word in English. In fact, that's always what our practice is, with the intimacy of this moment, the intimacy of this breath, of this, if I use added words, body, mind, experiencing. That's exactly all we have all the time. We really have nothing else. But we can fool ourselves by getting entangled and caught up in our thinking about it, in our interpretations of aspects, and in that entanglement, nothing wrong with entanglement, but in that entanglement we miss our life, and then we act in ways that just create more trouble for ourselves. I should say this: there's two characters in this. One is called Ditsang. Now, or in Sino-Japanese, he would be called Jizo. But it's important to know that though he's called Jizo, that's really the name of his temple. And that's a traditional form in China and Japan where the name of the temple becomes the name of the abbot or master of the temple or mistress of the temple. And some of you might know that Jizo is a name of a bodhisattva. There's a bodhisattva, Jizo Bodhisattva. In Sanskrit is Kshitagarbha Bodhisattva, Earth Storehouse Bodhisattva. And sometimes you'll see the figure, if you go to Japan or in China, you see the figure, it looks like a shaven head, either a little boy, little girl, it's unisex, with a bib on and sometimes a cap on, looks like a monk or a nun. In my bookcase I have several pictures of them. I had a picture on an image on the wall, a wood print, but I took that down, so it's no longer there. Jizo is a bodhisattva who makes a vow to go and save all those in hell. He will go into hell to save those in hell, and is known as the one who relieves suffering, especially for those in pain of illness, women in pregnancy, children. So, Jizo Bodhisattva. And this person referred to as Jizo in the case, or Ditsang. Ditsang's name is actually Lohan, or Rakan in Sino-Japanese, who was a successor of Xuanzha or Gensha, a famous master. These two characters, Ditsang and Fayan, are famous, and Fayan eventually becomes the name of a school of Chan Buddhism in China. So Fayan or Hogen school. So the case begins. Ditsang asks Fayan, where are you going? But before we get to that, let me say Fayan or Fayan Weni was already a leader of a group of practitioners, and at some point he was studying, and he and a number of his friends who were practicing with him felt that there's something lacking in their practice, so they went off on pilgrimage. We don't see that here, but in the original source of this case, which is a book called Transmission of the Lamp, we have, I'll refer to him as of Fayan, sets out with his friends across the lake to travel an area where there were many Chan monasteries. And then they began to travel, and all of a sudden there was this very heavy rainstorm, overflowing streams, flooding. So they took shelter in this Di Chang monastery. So being there, they visited Lohan or Di Chang, who asked him, "Where are you going?" And he said, "I'm going around on pilgrimage. I'm following the road wherever it goes." But pilgrimage is an honorable tradition, visiting different temples, different practice centers, different ways, as a way of deepening and clarifying our practice. But all of us are on pilgrimage. See, we're all on pilgrimage in this life that we are. We don't have to call it that formally. If we see our life as an ongoing encountering of circumstances and practice opportunities, whether at home, at work, waking up this morning and the condition of my body as it is, the condition of the universe as it is, the condition of the people I encounter as is, that's our pilgrimage, if we know it. If we don't, then we could even be on a formal pilgrimage and going to inquire, and we don't know it. That's what, see, he was asked, "Where are you going?" He could have given a different answer. But there's an interesting comment on these cases. In the format of the cases, there are line by line comments that later people make on it to both, well, to help us see the fundamental point of our life practice. In so the comment on "Where are you going?" is, why frame the man? Why frame, in other words, Jesus asking Phaion, and then the commentator says, "What, Di Chang, why are you framing him? Where, why are you already making trouble for him?" But in a way, that's also praise, because he's giving Phaion the opportunity, and yet Phaion says, "I'm just going around on pilgrimage." Is that an okay answer? Is there something wrong? The comment on that is, he goes looking for money to buy sandals. Isn't that a nice comment? He goes looking for money to buy sandals, meaning, obviously, if you're going on pilgrimage, you already have sandals, and yet you're going to look for money to buy sandals. It's making trouble when you need not make trouble. But we need to make the trouble if we don't realize what going on. We don't realize, which is what this is about. So he goes looking for money to buy sandals. So Di Chang doesn't let him go. What is the purpose of pilgrimage? In fact, that's exactly what the next comment is. After all, he doesn't let him go. In other words, he's not going to let him get away with it. Not going to let him get away with his confusion, in the sense that he still says, look at what you're doing. You're believing your story, if I say it in such crude terms. When we say, I'm troubled by such and such, and someone asks, what are you troubled by? And you go on with it, you just continue to entangle yourself. If you believe, when you tell yourself, oh, this is terrible for me, and that's terrible for me, and I shouldn't have to deal with this, and why is he like that, and she should know better, and further entangling. So, what is the purpose of the pilgrimage? Phaion says, I don't know. The comment on that is, why didn't you say so earlier? But then Ditsang says, not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is most intimate. Now, I want to say something about what he's saying and the different ways people have translated that last word, because sometimes that leads us to misunderstanding. Some people have translated that English word as not knowing is nearest. That's another way to say it. Another one says, not knowing, that's it. So notice the different ways those three, not knowing most intimate, not knowing nearest. Nearest and most intimate, very good. What is nearest to us? What is most intimate? Not knowing, that's it. The way that point is going to it again. However, we need to be careful. We need to be careful if we get ideas about what's going on here. Someone else translates it, not knowing is just the most direct and familiar. Most direct and familiar. In a way, most direct and familiar, most intimate, is what we take for granted and miss much of the time. See, our practice is always, as we say in Four Practice Principles, being just this moment. Being just this moment. How could we not know? How could we even have to say that? How could we need anyone else, much less to tell us that? I mean, that's what this moment is. And yet, we need it because we miss it, because we miss what's most intimate. Now, fortunately, and unfortunately, people can hear this and think, oh, this is about some state called not knowing, and the problem is that we know, and therefore we need to get to not knowing. All sorts of interesting things can happen when we believe that. All sorts of interesting things happen if we think we have to mimic some idea of not knowing. So practice means I get rid of all the things I know and I keep saying I don't know, and therefore I've attained a great state of awakening with not knowing. So even though Dogen has a comment on this case, he says, widely open realization. But he also says, I would respond to Ditsang, in other words, this is what he does often, I would respond when Ditsang says, not knowing is most intimate, I would respond, is not knowing most intimate, or is knowing most intimate? Then Dogen says, I completely leave the greatest intimacy to intimacy, but now I'm asking Ditsang, what is this intimacy? What is nearness? Because Dogen wants to encourage us further with practice with this. The whole point of these cases is not to get some ideas. but to encourage and support our practice of our intimacy, of our knowing, of our not knowing, of our caught in self-centered dream, our not caught in self-centered dream. Caught in self-centered dream. The problem is never the self-centered dream, but the caught in it. You can't do anything about the dreams which arise and pass as your life, because they just appear and disappear. We can't do anything. And yet, there's lots where we can practice with this, because this is exactly our opportunity. So, I will stop at this point. I intend to talk a little about the verse, but given that I've already spoken extended time, what's most useful is to use our speaking together to clarify our practice, our life, to clarify our intimacy, this or that, doesn't make a difference, that is our life. And that is our ability to serve our life and serve all the life that we encounter. So I'll stop now, but I will, hopefully you will be up for it. We'll continue with this case a little tomorrow by talking about the verse. Talking a little about the verse and seeing what we can make of it to help support us, as our ongoing practice, of intimacy, which is what sesshin is. See, instead of sesshin, we can call it intimacy. In a way, we do. Sesshin's a word that, of course, doesn't mean anything to most of us in English, but literally it means touching mind. See? That's the nearness of this body, mind, life that we are, is what sesshin is. Unifying with mind. Being this unified mind, life that is this universe, that is this moment. As you are, aching, tired, energetic. So I'll stop now, and if you wish to change your position, please feel free to do so. It will help you. And we can speak further on this. Yes. Wait. One, two.
So I was asked earlier this week, what is sesshin? And I said, okay, I'm not going to be at work, I'm going to be at sesshin. And they said, what is sesshin? So I guess I'm kind of happy that my answer was, I don't really know. But I was taken with the idea of, you know, when we go and visit some foreign place, and really like very different foreign place, and that's when I know that I am most aware of my surroundings, of everything, and most intimate with what's going on in my life. And then I was thinking, well, then how do I not know my own street that I live on? How do I not know the route that I take to get to work? How is it that I've come to not know these things, and how do I, or how is it I come to know these things, and how do I get back to a place of not knowing? Maybe I just created trouble for myself in asking that question.
Well, in a way, if we hold on to knowing, then sometimes you might need not knowing as an antidote for a moment. But if you hold on to not knowing, you create another idea. See, if I say it a different way, what is knowing without knowing? What is knowing that includes not knowing, or knowing that's beyond knowing not knowing? What is the intimacy of knowing? The intimacy, so that knowing isn't something separate from you, but it's simply picking up the cup and drinking and knowing wetness. You don't know it because you think about it. You don't know it because you even know it. It's just it's when we entangle in all sorts of ways that we miss this that we always are. Miss this that we always are, and everything we encounter is because I like this, I don't like this, I want this, I don't want this. It's not fair that she did it, or he got it, or I didn't get it, or I did get it, and they didn't. All in a way, Sashin is just the start, so that we then can continue Sashin throughout our day and with all the people that we encounter. And yet we definitely need Sashin, we need Zazen, so that the rest of our day is Zazen. Not in a special form, but in the special form of each moment. Because that's what it is. Each moment is a special form of our life. Listening to your colleagues, walking through the building to a classroom meeting or whatever. We people need this pilgrimage. Nothing wrong with saying going on pilgrimage. And yet, if we have an idea of pilgrimage, then we don't know what we're doing. If we hold to the idea of pilgrimage. Words are great, great opportunities, great tools. If I want to open a can, I don't have a can opener, I'm in trouble. But if I get stuck on the can opener and making sure that everyone knows I've got the best can opener that there is, or making sure that I know that, hey, I'm someone special with this can opener, then, you know, when you don't have a can opener, just don't have a can opener. When you have a can opener, great. Wendy.
Yeah, I was wondering why was it making trouble to ask him what his purpose was?
In a way, it's already adding something extra. Someone shows up, that they're there. If you ask someone, if you come in and you say hello to someone, fine. What's your purpose being here? Can be seen as, in a way, making trouble. Sometimes you have to make trouble. But in a way, fundamentally, it's extra. Fundamentally, it's extra, and yet we need extra. See, we need extra until we don't need it. So, if he had responded in a way to say, "You're adding snow onto the mountain," or something else, or "I'm in here to get out of the rain," great. But in a sense, it's like throwing a hook into the water. If no one bites on the hook, then the hook doesn't serve anything. If you bite on the hook, then in a way you're making trouble, but the hook is also making trouble. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess. Part of the reason I asked is I was thinking about Socrates, and, you know, he had that gadfly rule, and, you know, he just... people just really didn't like that he was asking questions, you know, and and I guess, you know, honestly, I'm inclined to, I guess in this way, be a troublemaker. So, you know, I've just been wondering about that, like about speaking the truth, about posing questions, you know. It's like, yeah, a lot of people don't want you to, and so it's just it's one of the sort of cons of my character.
If we have to ask questions, then we're creating trouble where there need not be. If there's something where the question serves something, then maybe the question's appropriate. In this case, they say, why frame the man asking the question? Why frame the man? In other words, when you ask someone, where are you going, you've already framed him as if he's going off to make trouble. So you're presupposing. So if he had respond, if the question, the person question had responded in that way, then okay, then I'm in the wrong, or I'm adding something by asking you that question. So it's in a sense it's a dance, and depending upon, in one sense you could say, Dietzang, the questioner who's asked the question, that's his, it's his testing. He's in the temple, the way the case puts it, or he's in this monastery. These people came and are staying in the monastery, and they took that opportunity. It literally said while he was there, Fayan took the opportunity to go visit the master of the temple and, in a sense, inquire about the Dharma, do the formal thing. So when he approaches him, so in a sense the master is saying, okay, let's see who's approaching me. I mean, this is all in the context of practice, and this person approaching him is already a long student, not of him, but of the Dharma, because he had already, it talks about, he was already the head of a group. He had studied and studied in a number of different realms, and now was going further to clarify because he wasn't satisfied with what he had done. And not only did he go by himself, but he had three or four companions. It's not clear whether they list several. But anyway, so in a sense, it's an opening line in a gambit to see who's here in front of me. He might show that I'm already going, I'm intruding on him by asking the question. Okay, I'm in the wrong asking the question, but he didn't show that. So it's in the nature of a dance, and when you would approach someone in a dance or in a what do you call it? A volley, back and forth. If they throw the ball at you, you know, or if they show up on your court, you throw the ball in them and see how they respond with it, vice back and forth. So, in a way, it's useful for us to see what are we intending with the question. When you ask a question, in a sense, you're taking a risk. See, as soon as you ask the question, you're exposing yourself to being exposed. So you can expose yourself, but what's behind that? What else is going on? What does that expose to you when you expose yourself to? See, if we're present and we see, am I adding something on in this question? Yes.
I'm kind of terrified to ask this question.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know how to ask it. When it has to do with knowing and not knowing, and has to do with seeming increasing of dementia.
Uh-huh.
That I have.
Yes.
And I don't even remember what the question is, really, except that I don't know how to live with that not knowing. And
what is I don't know how to live? What is that like for you, Jeff?
Well, you know, my whole life has been turned upside down.
But how is I don't know how to live with it now, today, for you?
I'm disabled.
Who says so?
I say so.
Ah, okay. So how do you feel disabled in your life now?
My bank account says I'm disabled.
No, your bank account is about money, but how is it that you feel disabled in your life immediacy now?
Well, I'm very frightened.
Ah, okay, good. See, that's much more direct. You feel fear a lot. Or you feel fear. And what is useful in your life when you're feeling fear? What enables you to to feel the fear and not be overwhelmed by the fear? Because you're saying you're feeling frightened. So what supports you when you're feeling frightened?
To do so-called positive things.
Good. So what? Give me an example of what you can do when you feel frightened.
Sitting is a good thing.
Good. Okay.
Taking a walk.
Good.
It's a good thing, but I have been too frightened to take a walk.
Okay. If you're too frightened to take a walk, where are you when you're too frightened to take a walk?
Where am I physically?
Yeah.
Sometimes in bed.
Okay.
Sometimes on the couch.
Okay. Is there anything else you could do when you're in bed and on the couch that would help you with the fear? I know, as you said, taking a walk is a very good help, and if you could at all get up and do it, even if you're frightened of doing it and yet nevertheless do it, that might be very good.
Yeah.
So being frightened and still getting up from the couch and taking a walk, and let yourself include as a walking companion, maybe not the only one, your fear, and maybe also your breathing and whatever other supports enable you to take that walk. Maybe another person, or maybe just your breath, and take the walk. Maybe just tell yourself, I'm just going to take a short walk around this block. I won't go further than that, but I can do that much. Or,
yeah.
What else helps you?
And I have taken walks.
Good.
You know, I get into a groove, but then I get out of it. What else helps? I've got this friend who has this neuro fit, this sort of program, neurofeedback program.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's helping or not.
Okay.
But I've been doing it. I think getting it out and doing it you know, just the...
Yeah. Getting it out and doing it helps.
I think so.
Good.
And there's this, yeah.
How about when you, after you get out and do it, you take that as a reminder that you could also then take a little, a walk?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
But I haven't been doing, you know, any chores or any Christians have been doing anything around the house.
Yeah. What, one frightened step at a time. One frightened step, and whoever and whatever supports you in doing that, please.
I'm in a lot of pain.
Okay.
So when I wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's unknown.
Yes.
You know that they're not sure exactly what I am, but we're still investigating, seeing doctor after doctor after doctor.
And even though the fear arises for you, if you can also allow the supports to occur and be used and be part of your life and be supported and make the supports with your effort, then even though you're not sure, please just continue. Okay, and coming here to sit now is a good continuance.
And there's been supports from here.
Good. Good.
People.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
I feel exposed, but thank you.
Good. Thank you for exposing yourself. That's very brave. See, despite your fright, you were very brave to do it. Thank you for sharing that with us.
I don't remember it exactly, but where he says he's going to the person responding, he says he's going on a pilgrimage. It almost sounded like they're almost saying he doesn't really have to go that far on the pilgrimage to see what he needs to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
In a way. In the dialogue, he asks him, we're going around on pilgrimage, and what is the purpose of pilgrimage? And he says, I don't know. And then not knowing is most intimate. The next statement is he then had a sudden awakening. And as it turns out, he then decided to settle down there. He and his companions settled down there, the four of them, and studied with Dzogchen or Lohan, and eventually succeeded the Dharma with him and became his successors. I think three of them, I'm not sure if three or four of them did. And so that's true. I didn't talk about that, but yes, I mean, this dialogue back and forth, you could say, in a way, exposed himself to himself. And the comment is, I didn't read it, but the comment on that not knowing is most intimate is, he meaning Titsang, the questioner, goes right up and bumps him off. In other words, he goes right up to him and knocks him off his what he's holding on to, if I say it that way. Bumps him off, you could think of as a crude way, is he literally bumps him off, if you think of it as, you know, but he allows him to open up. It's words that lead to Ditsang having an awakening, having a realization of what's his life, what this life is, what this matter of it, pilgrimage is, what this matter of, they say, 20 years pilgrimage, you know, clarified in one statement. And yet, we need to be clear on what it is this is all about. Another translation says, adds on, Fayan thus opened us to a great awakening. And that's where Dogen comments, widely opened up realization. Another comment says, he suddenly attained great enlightenment. Another translation. I'll read Dogen's, does a verse on this. Cavorting freely, all is clear, and again he freely romps. How can pilgrimage be bound by straight or twisting ropes? If we lack great achievement by one square inch, this knowing becomes increasingly small, 2 or 3 quarts.
Would you read that again and a little slower?
Okay. I'll talk about this tomorrow, maybe. This, as I said, there's a verse that comes with this case. And the verse, that verse was probably written about, let's say, 200 years before Dogen added his other verse. Other people do that too. I mean, you know, or maybe you don't know, the Zen tradition is you have a text and then 100 years, 200 years later, someone else might write a verse to it. And another 100 years or so, someone else might write a verse to the first verse or comment on it. I mean, it's sort of is the word intertextuality? It's almost as if they had a hyperlinked well, it is, because you've got a case which is, let's say, from the year 800, then someone else frames it in the year 1000, and then someone else in the year 1100 adds a verse to it, and then in the year 1300 someone else adds a verse to the first verse. So it's, that is called intertextuality, isn't it? I'm not. Anyway, it's like a hyperlink. So Dogen adds this verse to this case. Cavorting freely, all is clear, and again he freely romps. Now, of course, he didn't write it in English, so this is a translation. How can pilgrimage be bound by straight or twisting ropes? If we lack great achievement by one square inch, this knowing becomes increasingly small. Notice, increasingly small rather than increasingly big. 2 or 3 quarts.
What was the first word? Cavorting?
Cavorting. Cavorting freely. Playing around. Romping in the, at play in the fields of the Lord, as that phrase goes.
Somewhere else, but
so, but this is what our life is. Our life is cavorting freely in all the circumstances. See, I didn't want to talk about this poem today, but in all the circumstances of that we encounter, it's not. It's the freely cavorting in circumstances. That's an odd word, but it is. This is what our practice is, being just this moment of our circumstance, of knowing, of not knowing, of wanting to do something, of not wanting to do something, of feeling strong, of feeling weak, of losing what we thought we had, or gaining what we don't want, or being where we would rather not, or not being where we would rather be, or being where we are, being just this moment. That's our bodhisattva practice of inhabiting, embracing this moment intimacy. Not knowing is nearest, knowing is nearest. It's the nearest, the intimacy, that's our task. But let me stop. Someone wants to say something. Okay, remember, the nothing here you need to know. I bring this up to encourage and support us in our ongoing practice together. Thank you.